We all want to feel better, be happier, and have more freedom. And there are endless resources at our fingertips. But wading through a sea of self-help books, podcasts, and workshops takes more time than anyone has, except me. That's my job. I curate and translate the latest, most effective personal development wisdom to help you elevate your personal experience and improve the way you show up for others. I'm Kevin Miller, and this is Self-Helpful. Heal your mind by eating this way. Why do you think you feel the way you do? Regardless of the circumstances, some days you feel joyful and faithful and hopeful, and some days you feel sad, worried, and hopeless. It can be frustrating and feel out of control. You may not feel you have any mental health crisis necessarily. You're just dealing with ebbing and flowing moods. So you look to inspiration and positive thoughts, which is great. However, what we so often miss is looking at what we eat. Much of functional medicine looks at what we are putting in our bodies that our bodies don't want and what we aren't putting in our bodies that our bodies need. Your gut isn't just a repository for food to be digested. It is literally connected to your brain. It's showcased when you have emotional responses and you feel it in your stomach. You really do. So think to what you are eating. If you kept a food journal, you'd very likely see a correlation between what you eat and how you feel. This is part three in my series on renowned Dr. Will Cole. He's Pepper Potts doctor, for goodness sake. I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow. Today, I bring on my frequent co-host, Randy James, medical doctor and functional medicine expert, to discuss the concept in Will's new book, Gut Feelings, Healing the Shame-Fueled Relationship Between What You Eat and How You Feel. Rest assured, this is not a soapbox on eating nothing but raw veggies and never digging into a pint or a half gallon of ice cream. But we do discuss further the connection between what we do and don't eat and how we feel. If you have a big day tomorrow, if you want to rock your critical thinking skills or creativity, maybe delay the ice cream or whatever till afterwards. As I write this, I've had a good, long, productive week, and I'm about to grab a burger and some fries, maybe some ice cream, and of course, my favorite hard cider. But I'm managing my life to moderate the impact it has on me, and this episode is about opportunity much more than abstinence. Friends, thank you for tuning in. The Self-Helpful Podcast was founded through the Zig Ziglar Corporation. This coming June 15 through 16 of 2023, I'm going to be in Dallas to attend and speak at the Ziglar Coach Summit. If you are looking to influence people for the better, professionally or personally, which I know you are, that's why you're listening to this show, I invite you to join us. That's so much of what the event is about. Go to Ziglar, ZIGLAR.com/Coach Summit. I'd be honored to spend a day or two with you. Following these sponsors who help make the show possible and provide great resources for your life, I bring you a discussion with Dr. Randy James about Dr. Will Cole and the topic of his book, Gut Feelings, Healing the Shame-Fueled Relationship Between What You Eat and How You Feel. I want to start right there where we're sitting here chit-chatting before we even start the show. And I said, stop, we got to record that. So, you know, it's gut feelings. And we're going to talk about that, feelings and emotions in regards to our health and wellness and how they affect us. But that I'm not troubled, but the gut-brain connection. All right. So you're a functional medicine doc. This is like a home base topic of gut-brain connection. I hear about it. People talk about it. We got the big docs like Huberman and Atiyah and Hyman talking about gut-brain connection. Man, out here in the real world, what the heck is, we don't know what to do with it, is what I feel like. Even myself, conceptually, I get it. But, you know, this is my brain. It's in my head. My gut down here, even though we talk about trusting our gut feelings. So there's some thread there. But for the average person out here listening today, I feel like we don't know what to do with a gut-brain connection.
Yeah, that's a good place to start because it gets lost in translation. It doesn't translate to how we talk and go out there in the world. And so on, you know, is there physiology that is measurable in our bodies that connects the brain and the gut? And the answer is yes. But you don't get to sort of feel that. You don't get to see that. The same way that you know your eyeballs move around and there's, you know, six different muscles in there, and you just say, no, but I have blurry vision. Don't tell me about my lateral muscle or whatever. It's like my eyes aren't tracking properly. And so that the book and Dr. Cole and the bringing this into how does this translate to people out there in the real world is a toughie. And so one thing to say is that even in the, what I always say is the normal American docs, right? Like if you go to the ICD-10 codes of diagnoses, there's this oxymoron. You can have a headache in your tummy. And you can have a tummy ache in your head. Right? Like this is the speed of light
that
stuff.
That doesn't even speak to me, man.
I know. It's the quantum leap of the black, white, the yes, no. And so that's where we are though, right? Like it is us wrestling with the beyond, the majesty, the miracle, the mystery of the human condition. Like, and at the end of the day, like you always joke about, was that God talking or a bad burrito?
A bad burrito. Yeah, exactly. I had a pastor say that one time. I don't. So here's my what I'm going to give you, but I love that guy, and I remember it to this day. Obviously, 30 years later or so, because I tend to think, okay, here's my brain. Hopefully, everybody listening, they've gotten tuned in somewhat to, you know, how we feed our brain and brain food and whatnot. But I think about, this is my brain. This is my thinking, my mind, my emotions. It's up here in my skull. Now, if I eat, like this morning, so we just had our Friday, you know, guys group. If we had had, you know, an overabundance of coffee, so we're hypercaffeinated and we ate a box of donuts, and the night before we stayed up late having Cheetos and we, you know, whatever, all these things that went in. So I'm thinking, okay, those aren't great nutritional products. I put them in my, I swallow them. They're in my stomach, intestines, you know, they're being assimilated hopefully or whatnot. And if they don't serve me well, yeah, now today I've got brain fog and I can't think clearly. And so I'm thinking about that in a linear fashion. Is that fair?
Yeah.
As opposed to, I feel like what you understand and you docs understand, you know, functional medicine, at least Will Cole understand, is no, it's more than just a feeder to the brain. It's actually a brain somewhat like that, having a tummy, what'd you say? A headache in my tummy.
In your tummy, right. And there is actually such a thing. It's called the enteric nervous system. And enteric meaning gut related. Mm-hmm. So you have... And there is a book, and all of this research has started back in the 90s, and it was called Gut, the Second Brain, or maybe it was called The Second Brain. And I think he's...
And I know of that, there's what I'm trying to press into. Yeah. I hear that. It just doesn't make... It doesn't...
You're right.
It doesn't really resonate.
But Kevin, how often do we get to... It can't be that way, but it is.
Okay. I know. I'm wanting us to like find a way to better conceptualize it, that what I eat is not just fuel that then my brain up here in my head is able to use, that there's actually, and this is where it is interesting if people, this is what captures my interest though, is like the topic of Will's book, Gut Feelings. And we talk about trusting your gut. Yeah. And I've never really taken that captive and trust my gut. What the heck? Trust my mind. My gut, man. That's just where food is stored and assimilated. But then I also relate to it like when you, well, you'll understand this as somebody who doesn't obey the speeding limits either, that, you know, you're going down doing your thing and you're driving and then you see a cop and it's just that flushed feeling. And you often feel it in your gut. Why would I feel it in my gut? The thoughts up here in my brain, why would I feel the chemicals wash through my body and stuff? So then I go, okay, I'm connecting some dots, but it's
How about butterflies? Do you ever say, golly, I've got butterflies in my head?
That's true. Butterflies in your stomach.
You feel it.
That's where I'm interested, or I'm curious on helping us understand that this is more, there's more gravity to this. Of course, the point is, okay, yeah, what do I do about it? So we'll get to that. But that you're literally saying, no, we literally have a brain faculty in our guts.
You really, really do.
Which puts way more impetus, even more so, on the fuel we're putting in. And you know, I talked with Will again yesterday, and he talked about the things that you know this well, but that we don't tend to consider. We still, as a culture, especially as an American culture, we still tend to view naturally, instinctively, food as fuel. You just put it in the wood-burning stove to burn, as opposed to, no, these are the building blocks.
I would go one step deeper. You have a relationship. Like they're more than just building blocks. They're actually dynamic. They're not static blocks. We'll go one step further. What about the microbiome and their brain? So now we have an entire, talk about otherness, your 100 trillion cell microbiome is almost like a hive mind, if you will. Like it is in and of itself a thing made up of many, 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 many small things, each of which is subtly influenced by not only what you ate, but how you thought about what you ate and what you were thinking while you ate it. And again, the dynamism, and dynamic just means movement, not like dynamite. Dynamite means fast movement, an explosion. The dynamism, fluidity of this reality, and quite frankly, it doesn't translate to the typical modern busy American mind, because I need to think linearly to get bills paid, food on the table, kids out the door, into school, do this, do that, so that I can do the next thing. And if that's the world that you only live, we have to live in that somewhat, but if you only live there, you're missing it. You are downplaying your relationship with your gut instinct, your gut. And the word I use is, when we talk about gut intuition, is essence. The essence of Kevin Miller. We could write books and books and books on who, and even you, as this morning on our Friday, we're like, well, I'm different than I was. And today, I don't really know the answer to that question. I thought I knew yesterday. My essence has actually changed about that. Well, it's not that you're wishy-washy. It's that we are dynamic. And we have to be. This goes back to closed mindset or open mindset. If you, the more closed you are, the more brittle, the more breakable, the more pathologic you're going to be. Now, on the flip side, if you're only dynamic, only moving, only what, well, then you're wishy-washy and chaotic.
Yeah.
There's a bothness here that we hold it in tension. Sometimes butterflies are exhilarating. Like that's the Twitter-pated first date, first call. You're 16. You're going to call the girl and you hang up and you try again. And we both remember that feeling. Yeah. But can you imagine living there day in and day out with that torture?
It wouldn't be sustainable.
It's not sustainable.
I mean, with you talking about gut intuition, you know, gut feelings, trusting my gut, and I'm thinking about like being intuitive. I want that. I want that to be whatever.
A strength.
Yeah. I want to be able to harness that intuition and to just have some things that you just, you know, and you know that you know, and and you feel. And then even to think about critical thinking and decision making. Yeah. We all are going to face decisions today, next week, next month, whatever, big decisions that we cannot unequivocally, black and white, as you said, make a decision on this is the best decision. We're just going to have to go with one, and we're going to say, I'm going to trust my gut.
Yep.
Well, yeah, and if I'm left to that, then how am I, to Will's, how am I building that ability? And I continue to come back and thinking about, especially at our age, you just turned 55 a couple days ago. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I'm halfway to, or halfway through the year, I'll turn 53. And we're at the point now of seeing and feeling and experiencing the manifestation of the building blocks and our ability today to have creative thinking, to have, and to Arthur Brooks, in his book, Strength to Strength, yeah. talking to that second half of life, that if we're going to have strength in that second half of life, we've been building it and we can be building it better today to have these abilities. And I tend to think about like a house or a structure, you know, that we can see these homes, like the ones over in, I love seeing the stuff over in Europe, you know, where you've got the stone built house that's been there for however many hundred years. And here in America, you go see the flimsy stuff that they make that, I mean, 10 years later is deteriorating. And if we think about our food, and, you know, obviously exercise, sleep, all that stuff. But if we look at food as a building block, I am building.
You know where I go with the house analogy? Because that language, you are correct, but it tends to be more static. A brick is a brick.
Yeah.
So put a little bit of if we, and for me, I grew up in Germany and the ancient architecture, but I, in castles are very much this way where they're glommed on and some king comes along and he builds this part to it and then that part to it. So it's a growing
right.
structure. And I even picture the, you know, Jesus talks about the many mansions I've prepared for you. And I'm picturing an organic, fluid, yet firm structure. But there's always room for more. There's always room for growth. But the foundation is sure. Like you have trusted your gut so often, you've exercised that muscle, again, a dynamic thing that you're, it doesn't mean you're always going to be right or always picking the right path. And guess what? One of the muscles that we have to also exercise is, golly, I'm sorry, I was wrong. I missed it. I'm going to learn from that so that next time when I'm trying to trust my gut, there's a sense of, when you were talking about that, exercising the muscle of judgment, of discernment, of trust, of your... And then yes. on the flip side, I've had many patients come in and they'll say this, you know what? I know my body. And I always kind of say, yeah, I
know. Good for you, because yeah. we still don't know ours yet.
yeah. I know what you think you think uh-huh. you know. But once we pick out under the hood, if I said, Kevin, you know, how's your liver feel today? How's your kidney? How's your bronchioles? And we can get subset. And thank God that you don't have a brain awareness of your bronchioles. Or your fingernails or whatever, because I don't want to be bothered but with that. But the gut is, and all throughout ancient literature and ancient traditions and, you know, the many ancient Old Testament scriptures talk about, and they'll use different words, but one reference would be to kidneys. One would be to bowels. One would be to heart. One would be to soul. The poetic language there is get to the core, the root, the taproot, the main thing. And again, what I would come back to is essence or soul, that somehow we have been built in such a way that it matters what I eat. It matters if my microbiome is happy down there. It matters if my brain is happy up here, because if you're... Again, we can go back to the, if I have a headache, I can feel that in my tummy. It's mysterious or miraculous, and I think it's God's way of giving us in an interface with the mystery and the beyond is right there in your gut.
Yeah.
Remember years ago, I told you about that one morning when I had a, feels kind of crass to say a bowel movement, that felt almost worshipful. That, holy cow, the mechanics of 100 million bacterial critters just left my body. And it'll happen again and again and again. And I'm going to eat something today, and we just take it for granted. And in our culture, we call constipation or going to the bathroom every other third day or something normal. Oh, that's just me. Mm-hmm. Or if it's punctuated by diarrhea. And in fact, just yesterday, a very smart woman said, well, for years, I've only gone once a week, but that's just me.
Oh my gosh.
And I told her, I had just sold her kind of a package of, hey, you're pretty healthy. And I took it back. I'm like, you got to buy the other one. That is a problem. You've been wrongly taught. We need to transition your mindset about this to this other place, that, or you're going to become less well.
When we fast, we stop eating food and allow our body to repair. The research on the benefits and the reset is profound. The problem is we like food. We're addicted to food. Me too. Missing a meal or a day of eating is terrifying to a lot of people. So here is ProLawn. It's a revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes the body while making the cells believe they're fasting. ProLawn is not a diet. It's science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. ProLawn provides a 5-day program where you get snacks and soups and beverages all designed to keep your body in a fasting state, while taking away the difficulty and mindset of deprivation. I've fasted for 5 days with nothing but water, and my physical and mental state was incredible. My struggle was just wanting to fulfill my habit of eating. It was significant. ProLawn took that away. It's amazing. I feel like I'm cheating, but getting the benefits of fasting. So right now, ProLawn is offering What Drives You listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. So go to ProLawnLife.com/Kevin. That's ProLawnLife.com/Kevin for the special offer. Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top-tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin. Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com. I kind of want to just as people hear that and go, you know, because somebody's gonna go, gosh, that's me too, or somebody else is gonna say that, yeah, I go 10 times a day. Probably neither is good. Just on that, what is an average healthy
American average
bowel quantity? Is it day, I would think daily.
So it's going to be different for different people, different cultures. So we cannot get to the black and white. Okay, we can't. But what the theory is down this, you know, we're talking about the gut, and you should have a pretty good feeling with after bowel movement. That should be a
void is what our grandparents used to call it. I got to go void. Yeah.
And there should be a sense of, oh, that was healthy. Mm-hmm. That was a good thing. And I would say at least daily, with soft but formed. So kind of normally will come out in an S shape because the colon or the sigmoid colon is kind of S shaped. So it'll kind of curl up like
the poop emoji.
Like the happy poop emoji. That's right.
That you showed us at a camping trip. Hey kids, come look at this. This is a good poop emoji. It was a live
brag
steaming,
about this.
That's disgusting. That's terrible. Poop emoji. But okay, but yeah. So looking at that, normally it should be, you know, generally it's going to be.
I'd say daily plus, like rather than daily minus. That I skip a few days sometimes. If during travel, if during different things, and me too. Like even just this last time, I kind of went overboard because we were playing soccer and I drank a whole bunch of electrolytes and I got a little loose and so it kind of cleaned out. And so the next day there was nothing and I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to get up in arms about that. But averagely, one plus. Daily, plus maybe a little bit more often. There should be, it should be in the morning. That is a physiologic because nighttime is a time of cleaning. You normally people will wake up, get going, have a cup of water, and you know that is a signal for the bowels to move. There's also a gastrocolic reflex. So for me, I'd say 30 to 50% of the time you eat lunch or the first meal of the day, and there's another movement, but a gastrocolic signal. This is part of the enteric nervous system that there's a nerve response of, oh my gosh, you just ate. That triggers an evacuation. Mm-hmm. So kind of an early morning and then maybe an hour after lunch, that is and I would say probably a healthy kind of a pattern. And you shouldn't see, and you know, people call them different things. You shouldn't have milk tuds or deer pellets or rabbit poop. And
it shouldn't be a long brick. Log that right. Won't go
it
down.
It should not be the log.
And so again, we could do a whole series on poop. Right. But in looking again at, you know, gut health. So what has my interest right now, especially as we are seem to be at an all time high of talking about mental health.
Yeah.
And everybody trying to address their mental health. And, you know, I do advertisements for, you know, therapy, online therapy companies and whatnot, which is therapy is awesome and needed. But as we look at that and look at mental health and talk about meditation, which is great, and all these things that we look at with mental health, how seldom we are talking about food. And I've seen it, man, I've seen it even with some of my kids, you know, as they go through the teenage years too. And it's a troubling enough time, or it can be a questioning enough time, a transitionary time. And that's generally when they are eating the worst. And I look at that and go, no wonder. I mean, you're not helping things at all by, you know, eating a bag of Cheetos right before bed and that messing with you. It is interesting because, you know, you go through those early with our kids, we are controlling their food. Mm-hmm. So they're eating their vegetables, eating their stuff. Then they hit those teen years, they're questioning themselves, they're, you know, feeling goofy, whatever, and they're going to be prone towards that junk food. And now I've got kids old enough that now have come back to, holy, this matters about how I feel. Mm-hmm. And so they're eating well again. But during that transitory time, and I know you see so many you see plenty of teens and mental health issues, but all of us, mental health issues, and we don't pay attention to what we're eating.
It's very tough, Kevin, because even when you say that, people are going to hear this. One person's going to hear it like, oh my gosh, really?
I'm blaming them for what they eat on their mental health.
Right. And dude, they're kids and it's a bag of Cheetos or it's a bologna sandwich or it's cereal in the morning. And I'm like, man, in my house too. And then on the flip side, there's also some people that say, oh my gosh, my parents were so ludicrous and Naziistic about their foods that I have a food issue now.
Sure.
And then there's that piece. And one mom even questioned me like how long can we be on this diet before my kid has a syndrome about this? And I wanted to say, well, how long are you going to leave them on the other diet?
Yeah.
While we're seeing the actual consequences happen and you're worried about 3 months, but people are. And I don't mean to minimize that mom's concern, and I have, this is a daily conversation in both of our houses right now. And so it's trust your gut as a parent, trust your intuition. One kid needs to be
Okay, I want to stop you there because I want to say, you know, depending on where you're at, you may not be able to trust your gut. That's kind of what I wanted to drive to a little bit on this is we want to be able to trust our gut. But if it is in massive disarray, you can't. I mean, or it's well, suspect.
You're right. And so it's a very common pun intended comment for me and my patients where I will wink at them and say, trust your gut, but not really. Meaning trust your mind is where we're going to is I, cause, and I would, in another pun intended person is I'll look at somebody else and say, don't trust your gut. I know your body's crying out for a donut, but really? And I know you think you know your body and you think you need to eat every 2 hours or else you get hypoglycemic or dysglycemic, but you're just putting fuel on that fire. Don't trust what you think your body's telling you.
You know, you got me thinking about this. I need to go back. I'm not quick enough to find it. But my two girls, one of which has been your patient, two of my girls have been your patient, dealing with gut issues. And there was a little meme. They send, you know, funny stuff. And there was one that went around and said, yeah, you know, I was just feeling terrible and depressed and life is horrible and whatever. And then I went and ate sushi and the world was just a better place. And it was just kind of a funny look at it. But you could kind of wonder about that. How many times are we in a bad place of feeling mental health, a deficit? And you could say, one, you may be best, probably more often than not, to not eat. Let your body have a break and let your guts clean out. And, you know, or also feed it something that it needs. Kind of back to your functional medicine thing that we are suffering from what we're putting in our, what's the line? Putting into our mouths or not putting in our mouths? What's the?
Well, people would say, you are what you eat. And I'd say, well, you're mostly what you don't poop out.
You're what you assimilate.
You are what you assimilate. Yeah. And that goes into what are you eating? How are you eating it? And I want to hang out on what you brought up about that, the connection between it also kind of the reason that's funny is because there's many other people who would eat sushi and still feel bad.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's not that, but also at the same time, there are people that who often in terms of trauma. So we've talked about that, you know, the mind connection and trauma or early, anytime trauma, but early childhood trauma. And can that equal constipation? Or what becomes constipation? And overwhelmingly, yes, just the idea of holding on or clenching or fear or, and people can hold that in their neck and they get tight muscles and you can get a tight bowel. And many times there's been people who, when they cathartically through counseling or even just a walk in the woods, or they have a mindset of letting go and it translates into a change in bowels. So that's just another layer of that gut brain connection. And
well, what you said it a minute ago, and now I'm thinking about it again on, you said, you know, things can change, travel and whatnot. I have family members who I won't name to embarrass them, but that's a thing when they are out. I've got one kid right now and he struggles. You know, he leaves home, goes to school.
He won't go at school.
Comes home. Won't go or even just can't. Like it's not,
yeah, it just won't.
I have another family member I won't name, you know, and travel is so hard for her. She has such a hard time and it's like, come home and she's going straight for the bathroom to like finally release. And I think, how is that not a gut brain connection? So she's in a different place. It's uncomfortable. Some people may have, you know, kind of vulnerability issues with using public restrooms or issues with dirt and germs. Right? Whatever. Yeah. Either way, it's all mind stuff. It's all
in
your head.
They don't sit there and think, oh, I'm traveling, I'm not going.
Yeah, like my family, you know, most of them think a porta potty is just like oh my gosh, the worst thing ever. To me, I adore porta potties. As a pro cyclist, you know, I mean, the porta potty was salvation. Yeah, it's the last thing you do before you go get in the race. You're so grateful for a porta potty. And it's just mind dynamics. It's just our thoughts and then how they go in. And if your thoughts are in disarray or have anxiety and you can't poop or can't pee or whatever, how is that not a direct gut brain connection?
It's a great example that most people will say, oh yeah, I know that with me too. Travel, especially airplane. Well, you and I bet you don't go on airplane days.
Don't.
Because we get all, you know, anxious about, I got to get there on time, I got to be there, I got to whatever else. And so for me on airplane travel, I mean, I'll pee more because of that anxious response. I tend to not have a bowel movement on those travel days.
Really? I may
go more.
I maybe have one day a year that I don't have a bowel movement within 4 minutes of waking up.
It's good. So we've talked a lot about rhythm, the medicine of rhythm, just the reality of rhythm. Well, for goodness sake, the most rhythmic thing you do is think. And we take it for granted, or not for granted, we're just blind to the reality of the rhythm of what you just said. I wake up, not only do you expect to poop, but you pooped yesterday, and is it because you expect to poop that you poop, or because of 1,000 other variables in there? And the answer is yes. But there is a gut-brain connection there, and there's a brain, and it's vice versa. The enteric nervous system, so the amount of signals going to your brain from your gut is more than the amount of signals from your brain to your gut.
Which, again, goes right back to the gravity of what
the gravity
of what we're putting in our mouth that our body does or doesn't need, and what we're not putting in our mouth that it doesn't or doesn't need is just dramatic. And as we sit on the sit in the couch or at your office or whatever, and kind of happenstance think about, gosh, how do I feel? I feel good, feel bad, whatever. And obviously, a lot of things go into that. You know, your relationships, your sleep, your work, infinite stuff. But in this one, we're giving focus to the foods that you eat. And I think the reality that still, I mean, I think sometimes you take it for granted that all this knowledge is out there. Don't people know this stuff? And we obviously don't. I mean, here in America, especially, you know, the health stats just continue to get worse. We're sicker, fatter, tireder, depresseder, more depressed than ever. I mean, we really are. And it sounds crappy. Nobody wants to hear that. It sounds pessimistic and negative and stuff. But it literally is the stats. It doesn't mean the world's going to hell in a handbasket. It doesn't mean everything's bad. But we are creating chronic illness and disease and diabetes and heart disease and yada, yada, hypertension and everything.
Along that line of the things that we don't know that we don't know. So I'll say it in such a way that I think a lot of hearers, listeners will say, oh gosh, I never thought about that way. Because like you and I, you probably haven't eaten today and we're approaching lunch. And but how often, like American especially, they never hear from their guts. They hear hunger. Oh, I'm hungry. Or, oh, I'm shaky. Or, oh, I'm jittery. Or, oh, I need to eat something. Like that is ubiquitous through our culture.
Everybody in America has a blood sugar problem. They've got to eat now.
Yeah. That they perceive that. They think that. That's part of the gut-brain connection. But here's the reality. How often is your gut saying, please don't eat, please don't eat? And we never answer that call. We never answer the call to fast. But I promise you, it's there. And if you don't give your gut some rest, your gut-brain connection, does that contribute to depression and all the... And the answer is yes! Although it's not going to be a one-off like, oh my gosh, I didn't make it to 15 hours overnight and my brain exploded. Right? Like, it's never going to be that linear. It's the cloud of influence around the central person that we call Kevin Miller. All of these influences, kind of like an atom, right? Like an atom does not have the picture of like you see the atomic sign. Yeah. It looks like an electron floating around. It's not an electron floating. It's a cloud. It's an infinite.
It's interesting on the fasting thing, which I talked about with Will Cole. You probably don't know this because you're not on all the social media stuff, thank gosh. So he is Gwyneth Paltrow's, the actress, Pepper Potts in The Avengers. Right. He's her doc. And that's one of the reasons he's, famous guy. And they were doing a show together recently and the topic of intermittent fasting came on, and I don't know exactly what he said. I just saw, because I was checking out his social media stuff before having him on the show. It went viral, this thing, and it was all negative. Like, he's promoting this starvation diet.
Oh, gosh.
I know. I knew you would, the starvation thing. And he had to come back and go, no, it is not about calorie deficit. So if you're going to eat 2,000 calories in the day, fine, do it. Just give your body a break for 14, 16 hours and then eat your 2,000 calories. It's not about starvation. It's just about giving your body a break. And we think about intermittent fasting. I would say that we did a survey, the average person is thinking about it in regards to weight loss. And I wonder what the studies are. Maybe you know if some done. I don't know. But what is the, if you take a panel of people who have done intermittent fasting or fasting to any degree, of what the mental health benefits are from that? Because, and I wanted to say this, it's probably not totally fair, because there's some people who in an effort to fast probably experience anxiety. Like our buddy, Steve, who said terror is what came to mind with that. Okay. So take that away though. If we can take that away, I would say that the majority, if not all, of your patients or friends, you, me, whatever people we talk about, when in a fasting state, have said, okay, it may suck. I hate not eating. That's terrible. But man, my mind feels clear.
Yeah.
It feels like it's across the board.
Yeah. And I would say the data is overwhelming that this is, well, two things on what you just said. The fact that a negative viral response would happen just indicates how backwards our social culture is. To think of something as a 12 to a 24 hour fast as bad for you, it goes back to your book, Undoctored. Like, we are in a state of irrational superfluous of plenty, whereas the previous million years of time has been, we've never had three squares a day.
I'm a foodie, and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes, from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico, and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It really impressed me, from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky, where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935. And I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste. And right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of 7 requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
I'm looking at the book. Yeah, it's Undoctored. It's William Davis, Dr. William Davis. So I want to pull that out. We haven't talked about that in a while, but just real quick, it's a little point in his book. I probably have it underlined up there. And somebody says, talking like you would to
somebody. Yeah, like you're so extreme.
Yeah. So, oh no, they said, so you want me to eat extreme, huh? So Dr. James, I got to, I eat vegetables and whatever and eat extreme. And he's saying, wait, no, I'm just pulling you back kind of to normal. Where we have gotten is exactly what you said, is extreme, to where we have any food, anytime,
24/7,
constantly.
At 9,000 feet, we can go buy organic blueberries in December.
All year long. Yeah, we can. And that's not the norm. And the norm back in the day was cyclical food. Some foods available and then they're not. And that was good. And also times when food wasn't there. There's feast and there's famine and
always
and whatever. And a day without food was, I mean, I'm sure they didn't enjoy it, but it was not a big deal.
The mindset back then was, for most of human history, was don't starve to death. Like, they didn't like it.
Which is going to take days, if not
weeks. Was a real threat.
Oh, right.
Like, there was real famine, real starvation. Yeah. That was a real thing. And now it's not. Well, for most of us. Not to miss, there are urban deserts or food deserts where there's not real food within an urban setting for miles and miles and miles. There is real problems with this. So to be sure, but for most of us, we suffer from food plenty.
Well, what's the term? We're overfed and undernourished.
Yeah.
Which is, and again, yeah. going back to Will's statement about his book being different, that we're talking about a philosophy here. Because when you talk about fasting, you're a rock star with fasting and even your attitude towards it. I do not enjoy long fasting. I mean, intermittent fasting at this point, because we've done enough, it's not a big deal to not eat till lunch.
Well, let me go into that.
Okay.
Because I do think most of our listeners don't even know what we mean by prolonged or intermittent.
Okay.
Like I'm still surprised by when just yesterday, smart, super intelligent person. She's been working with me for quite a while. But she got out of the pit. She's much better than where she is. And I was kind of transitioning her to, hey, resiliency or wellness is a prolonged fast where you don't have symptoms. And in her mind, she's like, oh yeah, you know what? The other day I got to about 15 hours and you know what? It was okay. And I'm like, uh-huh. Why does she think 15 hours is prolonged? And I was building her towards, you know, 2-3 days. Now we can talk about, well, is 40 days, 80 days, like what's crazy? There is a point in, as we talk about the extremes. But so that people understand, I think the definition of intermittent fasting is going to be the overnight 12 hours. Like if you end your dinner at 6 and you're eating breakfast before 6, you know.
Well, so to compare that to, I do not know the exact stats. If I was to draw a guess, you say what you think, that the average American at least is probably eating later into the night, snacking on stuff while they're watching Netflix.
What's the average number of meals eaten per day?
Well, or even just what the real time is. So if you're eating and it's, you know, 10, 11 o'clock and you're still eating chips or any kind of food, really, yep. It doesn't matter. You're eating, you go right to sleep for 6 hours or whatever you do, get up and have breakfast. And yep. It's such a short window. And so even the term of breakfast, break fast, is not the case for most people. You're not. Because I also feel like, well, you know, at night, so I'm eating right up to where I go to bed. And while I'm sleeping is not a great digestive time. I mean, your body's not, I think we've all done that. You wake up in the morning and still feel full, man. That lasagna last night, still sitting there.
And so that night, rather than that night being spent in recovery, restoration, cleaning, autophagy, it was spent in just dealing with that mood or that last meal. You didn't have the kind of recovery you could have had or the kind of restoration. And that's where it is physiologically definably better to go to bed mostly empty. And this is my hardest one too. I go to bed rather recently after eating, but I would shoot for 3 hours. So kind of a in by 7 p.m., in bed by 10 p.m. kind of a thing for most people.
Yeah.
And then shoot for a, you know, if you sleep 8 hours, well, now you're at 11 hours. And then it goes back to, well, you know, 3 meals a day, 2 meals a day, snacking, what's the right thing?
But in the cultural thing of breakfast is the most important thing. Get up and have your eggs and bacon and whatever. And we grew up with that.
Well, that's less common. What do most people eat for breakfast?
Cereal.
Yeah. Cereal or a bar in the car, out the door with a coffee.
I talked about that with sugar in the coffee. Will, you know, eating on the run. I feel like, and I really attribute this to you. Like if you're at the point of you're going to eat on the run, Don't eat.
And I would say it this way, don't eat in the car ever.
Because you're probably going to eat the worst foods, the most convenient stuff foods. Yep. You're not thinking about it. It's mindless.
Yeah.
And I want to say this though with grace. I do not enjoy fasting. Right. I enjoy some of the benefits and whatever, but I would rather eat. I would rather put food in my mouth anytime. And I want to come back to the philosophy though, Randy, because even as we talk about that at night, you know, and I can hear somebody, I mean, like tonight, what is tonight? This is Friday night.
Yeah. Well, it's my birthday week. So I'm on several days in a row. Well,
okay. Two things then. One, we had birthday cake, a week or I don't know, sometime this week for a kid. And I literally, I don't know what somebody said, but I brought up, Randy says birthday cake is righteous. It's on a birthday
cake. That's right.
Let's just not have it for breakfast in the form of a donut the next day and for lunch and whatever and every day. So it's righteous there. But again, going back to the philosophy and kind of to the thing that we talk about of we all have appetites. We all want to feed our appetites. Sometimes the best thing we can do is elevate our appetites. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to go into this evening, so last night I've got, we've got right now, we got another one joining today. We have 11 people at my home right now, staying there. And it was, we were playing games. So I knew I hear I'm sitting there, it's 9 o'clock. I'm ready to go to bed.
And let's start another game.
Oh my gosh. And I'm
here's some M&Ms.
And sometimes I've done this already because there are multiple, sometimes like guys just have fun. I'm gone. Last night I said, I'm going to stay up. And so I stayed up a couple hours. It was like 11, which for me is like 3 a.m. And also food and whatnot. But I thought, okay, how can I minimize the damage?
Yeah.
You know, at least. So let's not, while they're having chips or whatever, I think I got out nuts.
Yeah.
You know, a little less harmful, less inflammation causing type food. Even dark chocolate almonds, you know, it's sugar, but it's not M&Ms.
Well, and we'll do carrots and cukes, but with a chocolate hummus. We found a chocolate hummus that's like, oh, well, whoever thought of cucumbers and chocolate?
And somebody's going to hear that and go, dude, come on, Cheetos. You're going to compare.
I know, but here's the other thing too, where you're saying cultivate your appetites.
Yeah.
And I would say to those people, you are cultivating your appetites, whether you think you are or not, and you're either cultivating it towards Cheetos or something else. And I would say there's a time and a place for some righteous Cheetos, although that's even less often than your birthday.
Mm-hmm. And especially late at night.
Especially late at night.
Eating that stuff.
But where you guys are with, you know, graduation and family and all that kind of stuff, this is celebration. And for me, and notice it's no longer birthday. It's my birth week.
Absolutely. That's righteous. Come on.
It's a good thing we couldn't possibly have eaten all that stuff in one night, and it's kind of spreading its way out. But I feel it. I do. And in the morning, there's a sludge. I just call it sludge.
But even that, even just being aware and going, you know what? I made the choice. I know it's going to have negative consequences. It was worth it for that imbibing.
Yeah.
And next week, you'll probably...
I'll clean it up and I'll feel less sludgy.
So, yeah. So again, just having it out on the table. But I want to bring up something that is a big part of Will's book that is a part of this conversation right now is shame. Cause we can look at this and feel shamed by food, get afraid of food, be upset at it, and even hear messages like this. And we know it's good, but nobody wants to hear this in essence. We'd rather hear something that said, you know what? Studies have now shown best health comes from all the wine you want, beer, hot dogs, and whatever. And you know, it's not the case, but we are going to imbibe. I mean, you and I are food lovers. We're wine lovers, coffee lovers. I mean, we enjoy that stuff. We try to manage it well, but we're not. I mean, abstinence has probably a zero efficacy rate over time to just abstain. Well, to just say, I'm gonna abstain from everything I enjoy.
Well, hang on,
okay,
because I know you're trying to get to a principle, a theme. But
always.
Yeah, that's right. But you don't abstain from fidelity to your wife. You don't abstain from wearing clothes.
Right.
There's many, many, many places where you draw the line and say, I will go no further. And for food too, you don't eat worms. You don't eat all kinds of food that you could eat. And so I just want to,
that's true.
But here for me and you both, even though you say, golly, fasting, I don't like it. I think you would resonate with this idea. I can say this. It's taken years, but I have cultivated the literal enjoyment. Right now, you and I did not eat breakfast. I ate too late. That's true. But I like feeling empty right now.
That's true. I should stop saying it even for my own mental program.
That's why I wanted to say that. Yeah. That you, even though
I'm just trying to have compassion for the fact that, I so enjoy, I cannot elevate how much I enjoy putting food in my mouth. Sometimes it boggles my mind.
You're like a 2-year-old.
Enjoyable putting something in and taking a bite of food.
I'm going to buy you a pacifier. Okay.
Just cover it in dark chocolate. And so I understand, but you're right. Man, if I want to kill it on the bike and have a great performance, I know what I'm going to eat the night before, how I'm going to sleep.
Right.
I'm going to get up in the morning.
You've cultivated that.
Yeah, I have.
And so even as we don't shame somebody, I want to encourage them that you and I are on our journeys, and we're 50, whatever, but I remember being 35 and man, the idea of going without breakfast almost made me nauseated, like to skip a meal. And I can barely remember thinking that, but I remember that. And I remember when XYZ happened with an illness with my kid, and I'm like, well, my gosh, we got to get rid of gluten. And I had to. Well, there went my peanut butter sandwich in the morning habit. And it was hard, but it led to the cultivation of, and then we did our fasting stuff in 2021 and whatever. And yeah, you and I have been to 5 days. And I don't think everybody should wake up and fast for 5 days or whatever. I do think that if you can, you are more resilient, likely healthier than you would have been if you've never. And for everybody, you need to train into that, just like you would train into running a marathon or lifting or bench pressing 200 pounds or anything, or even learning German. You train into it. So here we are holding out to people the hope, the encouragement that to feast on fasting is part of the gut-brain connection too. Because if your brain can only feel anathema, which I don't even know what that word means, bad at the prospect of fasting, well, that's a problem. That is a part of the, then you are a slave to the next meal. And there is a reality of that impacts your marriage and your health and your finances and all the, because we're a web of interrelated connections.
And you got me into that mindset around, I think it was with wine when we first started looking at that and about fasting. And you said, you know, I don't think I have a problem with it, but I want to make sure that in essence, what I took from it is it doesn't own me.
Right.
That I control it. And so you did a 30-day fast, something like that. And I've thought about that with everything. And even the 5-day fast that we did was to me more of my motive was more around, I want to be in control.
Well, I took some of that from you. Rather than saying life happens, well, you happen to life.
Yeah.
You, and now we're back to agency and captaincy, and you don't have 100% control of all of your molecules. Thank God. Again, that's way too much godlike power. You have control over how you think and your responses and things like that. But even then, most of how we respond to most things, including food and including fasting, is a consequence of how we thought and responded to it yesterday and the day before and the day before and the day before. And oh, guess what? Those microbiome critters in there, they'll knock on your door. They expect you to eat the way you have been eating. Mm-hmm. And people will say it in the terms of, oh, I'm hunger, or I'm shaky, jittery, I need to eat, I'm hangry. And
I like the awareness, and I like that we've kind of come to that of being aware. It doesn't mean that you're going to be perfect in that. So right now I have programmed myself that after lunch, when I eat, I have programmed myself that the first, I don't
know what you're going to say,
is chocolate covered almonds or chocolate, which, and folks, I'll tell you, we do. So I have almost always in my little cabinet here in the studio, dark chocolate covered almonds. So less sugar, but it's still chocolate. They're always there. You know where they are. You come get that. And we usually have dark chocolate chips in the freezer, always there. And it's a little handful. It's not an overdoing, but I've trained my body. I do not need that. I do not deserve that. I enjoy it, and I am just aware as I smile at myself and have a little handful that I've trained myself to want that. And to realize I've trained myself to want a glass of wine at night with dinner.
Yeah.
I've trained myself to do that.
But you're aware. Mm-hmm. And let's say today after lunch, you get a call from home, 911. Is there any doubt in your mind that you can walk away from that chocolate and go handle?
And sometimes I just will, just for that reason. I just
there's no doubt,
especially if there's a viable interruption, like I should go, okay, just don't, and then I forget about it,
and then you forget about it
and go that's on right. And until I eat dinner, and then
and
I
that's
think
where
it.
Yeah. Thank God that yeah. You have the mindset, awareness, habit, the nudge, the training of it's not hour, minute after minute after minute of I'm thinking about it. And to our brother alcoholics, our 12-step people out there, it's one day at a time. It might be 1 minute at a time, full of grace. It starts with awareness, and we're all addicted.
Yeah, yes, and that's that is interesting to think about. I'm glad we came on to this about just control, because I do want to be in control of my faculties and of my body and of my decisions. Yeah. And we all would say that, and yet we have come to this cultural phenomenon with food, it feels like specifically of being a slave to it and speaking that, oh my gosh, I'm hangry. I've got to eat. That's one of the most, the last chapter of my book, What Drives You, I talk about changing all your, I need to, I got to I want to. And I use food in that. There is hardly ever been a, I'd say honestly, never been a time in my life that I have been, when you talk about starvation, truly hungry, like somebody who's starving. But I want to eat. So today for lunch, I don't need to, don't have to, don't gotta, but I want to. Yep. So even just to say that, you know what? Hey, it's, I want to eat. And to
how often do you say, I want to not eat?
Never, never, though I should start doing that.
But that's my challenge. I'm going to, instead of saying in the morning, I'm not going to eat. I'm going to say, I want to not eat.
Yeah.
I
feel like I'm wanting to, but that's my point. I want to bring valor to saying, no, I do not have to eat. Yeah. I am not a slave. Now let's pull out real quick, just in compassion though, that to some people listening, you have trained your body and you know, if you're young, you grew up in ways that you couldn't control, not your fault, whatever, but you have trained your body to a place of inefficiency, pathology, to where you may struggle to skip a meal or go that long. And I think you would say that that's ill health.
Well, so, I would say it's less resilient.
Yeah, okay, which is why on a fasting thing, though, I've seen docs doing this more, even, you know, like the ones that you listen to the podcast saying, you know, this is why they say, before doing whatever, consult your doctor, because they don't want to be liable for somebody going to fast. And they have trained in a blood sugar problem, or maybe they really do have one, whatever, and they're going to pass out and conk their head and whatever. So granted, there are exceptions. It's not for most people. Most people listening should be able to skip a meal or a day and not eat and not be loopy with that. If you are loopy from that, that's a bigger telltale sign that things are off.
Things are off. And here's how I would, for the uninitiated or the untrained, right? Like for the person that it feels daunting to, and you would say this to your children with grace and whatever, you're not going to invite your 10-year-old out on a 20-mile mountain bike ride.
Right.
And say, come on, keep up. That's irrational. In the same way that I think an analogy of this is a muscle, and most of us have really atrophic, flabby muscles of fasting or of just awareness of food. And so to the person who is going to skip a meal or even skip a snack, I would say in this context, don't let it be on a day where you have to perform and you've got a meeting that you have to be on your toes, or you've got a date, or you've got, you know, something that you need to be in your own personal rhythm. But this will be a day where if you're in the office, then it's less demanding. And you're going to hit that noontime period and you say, well, normally I would go eat, but what am I going to do now? And then I would say, well, go on a walk, go do something enjoyable, go shopping, go just do something else to get your brain over there on these other things. Don't do triggers of food. And then when you feel hangry, jittery, shaky, grumpy, or you just have that wave of sort of the growls and the gnaw of your stomach, then you've already calculated you're going to give yourself time. And I would say to anybody doing this, go grab a drink of water, even flavored water or, you know, lime or, you know, your favorite bubbly or something of water, and lay down for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Be okay with hangry. You're not going to die. Promise. I do promise that one. You might feel something, but lay down for 20 minutes. Think about something else. Read a book. You know, catch up on social. Watch the news, whatever. And I promise in 20 minutes, in all likelihood, you'll say, oh, okay, it went away. Yeah. Yep. And now you're just training. This is no different than everybody. In America, we have a lingo of exercise. And even if it's just on TV, we see... When was the last time you ever saw a show where somebody was fasting? It's just not a part of our culture. So on TV, we'll see the gym and a coach saying, hey, one more, you can do it. Push it out. You got this. But the guy's doing a bench press and it hurts.
Yeah.
We're hurting him or her. Why is this good in that case. But then when somebody over here says, oh, I have a little twinge of hunger, a little twinge of a shake, a little twinge of that we cave in to the snack. And again, you could hear this shamefully. I'm trying to speak coaching words of saying, yeah, lean into that. Lean into that pain. It will not kill you. And it is the piece, one piece of that puzzle is leaning in. And we're not saying a 5-day fast. We're saying, hey, skip a snack, make it to dinner, and then have a nice dinner.
Well, because to what you, I wanted to bring up what you said a minute ago, if you are looking towards, you know, an important business engagement or a date or something important like that, what we have gotten to, and I've seen more and more people of this, you know, concept, is those would be the times when I would fast. If I've got like every once in a while, you know, we'll do our Friday morning thing and we'll go down to the restaurant and actually have a breakfast, which is kind of a new thing. If I had a show happen in that day, I'd say, no, man, I'm not going to do it.
But we had to train into that.
We had to train into that. Yeah.
But if you're going to go on a 20 mile bike ride.
Oh, hold on though. I often won't. Remember I had my elite athlete.
Well, I was going to say, unless you're competing.
Elite runners at the house. So these are Ethiopian guys who did high altitude training at my house. And they would come, they'd get up in the morning, 8 o'clock or so. They'd have tea, this African tea with cream in it. And that's it. And then go run 20 miles at 9,500 feet. You know, above sea level. Now they've trained into that.
Super slow at a 5-minute mile pace. 5-minute,
yeah, but without having something, you know, in their stomachs. It's funny. I think about that at the kids' soccer games, you know, and the kids play soccer for an hour, which means they're standing on the field doing nothing for, and you got to have snacks and drinks. Yeah. So, well, I didn't expect that we'd get on fasting with this, but when we look at our gut and caring for our gut, it's such an important thing. The foods that we eat, the foods that we don't eat, on moderating our gut and looking to our mental health. So when you're thinking about your attitude, your mood, your feelings, that we are trying to put more gravity on, think about what you are and are not putting into your body that has such a direct connection to your overall well-being.
And I appreciate Will Cole and the flavor. And you and I say this often in your business, in my business, when somebody makes a decision, it's most often the cloud of thinking around your brain is emotional. It's philosophical. So highlighting the interplay of that mysterious area between the gut and your philosophy, your essence, it's important for people to be aware of that. So yeah, thank you. It's a good show.
Good show. Here's to you and your gut. Dr. Will Cole's book again is Gut Feelings, Healing the Shame-Fueled Relationship Between What You Eat and How You Feel. You can find him at drwillcole.com. And you can connect with Dr. Randy James at truelifemedicine.com. Thank you so much for tuning into this self-helpful podcast where I strive to help you and me elevate our personal experience and the way we show up for others. Stay driven, my friends.